Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Lambeth Palace. Thank you very much for turning out for this briefing. As most of you know, and I assume that's why you're here, the situation in Sudan is no less critical than it was some months ago, and we had a previous press conference here on the subject, and if anything, gets more serious as the days go by. We are rapidly approaching the North-South referendum, the beginning of next year in Sudan, with a very large number of questions unresolved, and with at least two issues having become a great deal more urgent in recent weeks. One is the way in which the referendum is going to work in the border area of Abyei, and I'm sure the Archbishop will have a few words to say about that shortly. The other is the future of refugees from the Sudanese south in the north, of which there may be as many as 4 million. What we hear from the government in Khartoum is extremely disturbing about the future and the security of these communities in the north. So, when we spoke about this at the beginning of the year, on Archbishop Daniel's earlier visit, I think both of us spoke about the way in which the danger was of Sudan sleepwalking towards disaster. The severity of that disaster is, I think, beyond any doubt if action does not continue from the international community. The British government has a good and strong record of supporting the implementation of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement in Sudan, and this is no time at all to ease up the pressure that our government can give in this way. Our presidency in the coming months of the UN Security Council is strategically of the greatest importance. I understand that there will be discussion of Sudan under our presidency at the Security Council. I think we ought to be encouraging robust action there. But I won't take any more of your time. I'm very, very pleased and honoured to have Archbishop Daniel Deng of Sudan as my guest in these days. He's had an extremely busy few days in briefing, lobbying, media work, and at the risk of embarrassing Archbishop Daniel, I would want to say that he has been, throughout his time as a bishop and archbishop, a colossally effective advocate for Sudan, a defender of the most vulnerable communities in his country, an eloquent spokesman for church and nation. And I'm very pleased to have him here and to ask him to say a few words to you.
Thank you, His Grace, for this opportunity that you have provided for the Episcopal Church of the Sudan to be able to send the early warning of a situation coming up in the Sudan at the moment. My presence here is to let you be aware that the situation in the country, we are going to have the referendum supposed to happen on the 9th of January 2011, but we have fears that a lot of things, preparation has not yet been done, registration of the people have not been done, the border demarcation has not been done. A BIA protocol commission has not yet been formed. And we are now fearing that in a BIA area, the Masiria have moved into a BIA areas, which is crucial at the moment, give us a big fear that a fight could erupt at any time in that part of the country. We are fearing the influx of refugees, if anything happened during the 9th of January 2011. And there is no preparation at the moment for how to welcome, how to receive those influx of refugees, which are going to come either from the north of different parts of the Sudan back to the southern Sudan. And the government of southern Sudan at the moment, they have no capacity really to administer or to welcome these people in terms of humanitarian situation. And we are afraid that if the two parties, SPLM and the government in the north, if they do not agree of how the citizenship is going, because they are discussing the question of citizenship at the moment, But up to now, they have not agreed on how the two countries, if there is a separation, is going to work out. We are afraid the violence in the southern Sudan also may increase because we have an LRA in western Equatoria, and that also it can cause disruptions in the life of the people in the southern Sudan. Already it has caused, people are now displaced in most of the places in western Equatoria, and that is a very big concern, and we are asking the international community and NGOs really to pay focus attention to the people of Sudan so that they should not be allowed to take the country back to war. We are asking the government of UK, the government of United States of America, and UN, and Norway, those who have actually, who part of the strikers who have signed the comprehensive peace agreement, to come back to these people so that they should not be allowed to happen. Because if it is allowed, the world will be sorry tomorrow, because it is, because at the moment you could see the way they've placed it up, soldiers in the border between the north and the south is very, very fearful, because they are almost 5 months from each other. Angry soldier could do anything and that will pack the war. So if the people are not really to support these people, not to allow the war to come back. So my presence here is to appeal to the international community and all the NGOs in the world really to support the people of Sudan, not to allow them to go back to war. That is the message I want to make to across. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Archbishop. We can take, I think, about 15 minutes of questions. So let's see.
I'm so sorry, Archbishop, I was a little bit late as a result of that, because your opening comments have been very strong. And I just wondered if you would mind saying again for the recording why that Sudan is sleepwalking towards disaster, and perhaps enlarge a little bit on why you believe to be, that's been the case following the statements by Archbishop.
The referendum is due at the beginning of next year. A great many of those things which should have been done in preparation for the referendum have not been done. Border questions are unresolved. The question of how the referendum is to be implemented in the border area of Abyei, as Archbishop Daniel has said, is unresolved and getting more serious by the day. And the situation of southern refugees in northern Sudan, and there may be up to 4 million of them, is a matter of real concern, because if there is a vote for separation next year, their status in the north will be even more vulnerable than it is at the moment. The threat of open war, of course, in and after the referendum period, is the most serious thing of all, and that signals a return to what have been decades of slaughter and poverty and utter instability in a very large, very vulnerable country, which also has an important impact on its immediate neighbours in the region of Africa.
Well, we need the international community really to pin down the NCP and the SPLM to complement, to finish the comprehensive peace agreement as it is written, because it was a comprehensive agreement signed by the international community, and I think the international community has an obligation to make sure that the referendum is done and should not be allowed to be broken by any party among those people. So they have the capacity to sit on the table with the two parties to make sure that referendum takes place, because it is when referendum takes place in time that diffuses the situation.
If I may just add to that, the Comprehensive Peace Agreement 5 years ago set down a number of desirable conditions for stabilizing the situation in Sudan, moving towards a referendum on possible separation. But those conditions, which included clarification of borders, the ownership of oil revenues, and of course the reconstruction of devastated infrastructure after years and years and years of violence. None of that has happened. And that is the ongoing running sore of Sudan. The world's attention has very understandably been on the dramatic violence in Darfur, and as I say, that's quite intelligible. But because the international community has taken its eyes off the need to implement what has been agreed in southern Sudan, that has simply been growing more and more serious day by day in the last few years, largely unnoticed.
Thank you. My name is Jill.
Well, because the people in the southern Sudan, especially those who are in the north, if a referendum comes out that there is a separation between the north and the south, people in the north may push the southerners who are already in the north, they may push them to the south, and that can cause a big crisis in the southern Sudan. First of all, it may cause humanitarian crisis. We want the international community to be ready for that. Then it can cause also instability in the southern Sudan, because they may, at the moment, there are some militias who can be used by the people who doesn't want the southern Sudan to get independent. So it can be a way of destabilizing the whole southern Sudan. So that is a fear. We wanted the international community to make sure such a situation should not be allowed to happen.
Thank you. Bishop Williams, you've been to Sudan to rank...
Sorry, could you identify yourself?
My name is Jesse Zink. I'm a freelance reporter from the U.S. and I was just in Sudan last month. Archbishop Williams, you've been to Sudan to rank when Archbishop Daniel was then Bishop Daniel. I wonder if you could say more about your impressions of Archbishop Daniel on that visit and your interactions with him.
Before I went to Renk some years ago, I was very conscious of Archbishop Daniel's record in bringing to light several of the crises and abuses that there were in the region. He's spoken out very courageously about some of the difficulties caused by Chinese investment in the area and the tensions that created. That, of course, is a problem not confined to Renk. I was also very struck by the strategic approach that the Archbishop took to building up his own community. I was privileged to be part of the dedication of the cathedral in Renk, but also to see the work that was beginning with education in the area, both education in general and education for Christian ministry. It was clear to me at the time that Archbishop Bishop Daniel, as he then was, had emerged as a major statesman in the region, and I was particularly glad to see him in his present role, to embarrass him thoroughly, but I'm honoured that he's with us and grateful that he's there. I don't think there's any comparison whatsoever between the conditions of my Archbishopric and his. Some people are on the front line in matters of life and death, and some people are not. I'm just privileged that we have people like Archbishop Daniel who are there. Helen.
Yeah, the Lord Resistant Army it should not be part of the problem of the southern Sudan, because Lord Resistant Army was a group of rebels fighting the government in Uganda. But according to the people, they were being supported by a group of people somewhere in the north. So when the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was signed, between the government of Southern Sudan, I mean the government of the north and the rebel in the south by then. Then these people were moved to Congo, and then, of course, the jungle between the Congo and Sudan is more or less the same. So they could easily travel between the Congo and Sudan, and they cause havoc between the two countries. And Lord Resistance Army, people are saying probably there are people who might be supporting them to destabilize the Southern Sudan, because after all, they have no right of fighting in the Southern Sudan. There's no reason, they have no cause that they're supposed to do that, unless somebody somewhere is wanting to use them for the destructions of the people of Southern Sudan. So actually, the war of LRA is not a war of the people of Southern Sudan.
The LRA is what you might call a regional virus in that part of Africa, jumping borders and very difficult to pin down, though possibly more efforts could have been made, and that's another story. But just at the moment, the news we hear is, of course, of large areas, three dioceses, I think, Danielle, in Southern Sudan, where people have been displaced in large numbers because of their fears of LRA activity. They're afraid to go back to their villages to sow their crops and so forth because of the level of indiscriminate violence that the LRA bring with them. But as Archbishop Daniel has said, one of the anxieties is that there is support from elsewhere deliberately destabilizing the South, not only through the LRA, but through a number of other, as it were, front agencies, whether it's militias in the South, whether it's tribal conflict. The story, I think, is the same in a number of regions.
But, yeah.
Destabilization from several agents widely believed to be supported from elsewhere. Another question. Yes.
What type of concession?
What type of concessions
you made?
Concessions. What kind of concessions do you think the South should make to the North if you think there should be concessions made?
By the people of the South.
By the people of the South.
Well, that might be a political question. I may not be in the position of answering in that way properly. My interest is always is that as a church, as a civil society, we are actually seeing in a peaceful manner a transitional of our people, transitional way of life, or peaceful coexisting, a peaceful way of bringing the Comprehensive Peace Agreement to an end. That's what we are advocating as a church. And then to allow our people in the Southern Sudan to be to practice their rights of voting during the referendum, so that it, because it will diffuse any situation might arise. The other fear, as I said before, transitional areas like Blue Nile, like the Southern Kordofan, these people have been given also by the Comprehensive Peace Agreement that they should go what they call a popular consultation, whereby they are to be asked of whether they are satisfied with the agreement or not. Then they have to decide on their fate. Those are the issues for us as the church at the moment. We are dwelling on that to give information to everywhere in the world so that we are to be helped. We should not be allowed to go back to war. We have no problem with Muslims in the country. We work together. Even recently, we held a conference which was attended by Muslim and Christian in the Southern Sudan. We respect each other. We respect Islam. Islam respected us. The problem with the our the politic in the Sudan is that it is mixed up between the religion and the state in the north. So when you are trying to identify the sheikh or to those who are leaders in the Islam, you don't find them. You find yourself sometimes talking to the ministers in the government who pretended to be the sheikh. So it makes it difficult for the flow of conversation between the Muslim and Christian. But in the south, it is now very clear because there is a separation between the state and the church. So we could now easily identify the sheikh, and then we could easily talk together and move. That's in the south now, it is very clear, and we are moving together.
Yes, first and second.
Well, I think there is time still for registration. We feel that if there is a will on both parties and then the international community to allow the people of Southern Sudan to register, there is time registration could be done, and we believe in that. But if people are not willing to do that, that is the fear, and that's why I am here. We need these people to be helped so that the process of registrations and other things which are connected with the votings are to be done. This less than 90 days left for us. If people could work night and day, people could succeed. So that not to allow the vacuum, because come 9th of January, there will be no... anything that brings these two parties together, because there will be no agreement. The comprehensive peace agreement could have come to an end, and then where do they meet? So we have to work hard to make sure this process is done. The other thing people were, because you know in the history of Sudan, our elder man called Abel Alia wrote a book called Too Many Agreements Dishonest. People are already counting this agreement is going to be considered like one of them. So that's why it is very, very serious, and everybody is looking at it, whether this agreement is going to happen or not. If it fails, and then it will push back the country like what happened during the Addis Ababa agreement. When the North just got up at night and then canceled the Addis Ababa agreement, then immediately people went back to war. So this is actually what is going to happen. Comes 9th of January and nothing happened, people go back to war. That is our fear.
And that reinforces, I think, the need for really robust international involvement in the processes of voter registration and the implementation of the referendum itself.
Yeah, Tom Sanderson from Five Talents Microfinance. Can you say a little bit about the role of the church itself on the ground in promoting peace and stability during this time?
Yes, I think the church, we are leading now in bringing peace, especially now we are making conferences, we are bringing workshops in every part of our country at the moment. Church is very active. Recently we held a good number of workshops. Even as I am speaking today, there is a big conference going on between the government of the Southern Sudan and the churches. And that is to really harmonize the life of the people. And that, so we are leading in this as a church, because if you go to all the agreements which have been signed in the Sudan, they are being led by the church. And like the last election, it was not going to happen, but the church took it as a point not to fail one part of the comprehensive agreement. So myself and the Archbishop Catholic, both of us took it as initiative, and then we encourage all the churches to advise their people to go for registration, and they accept it. because they trusted the church.
I think we have time for one more question. Archbishop Daniel will have a word on this, I'm sure, but let me just repeat what I said earlier. The UK government has a good record of involvement in Sudan, and I think that's been recognised. I think even during this year, pressure has come from HMG in a helpful way. Now that we have the presidency of the Security Council next month, it seems there's a very good opportunity for Britain to show some leadership, and I believe that that is very much in view. I would like to see, and I every confidence we shall see our government stepping up to the plate on this and keeping up the pressure on the international community to do the kind of monitoring that is needed in Sudan, to apply the pressure that's needed on the government in Khartoum to avoid the kind of disaster that we all fear.
Yeah, it is, as you put it correctly, that, you know, the British government are already doing a tremendous job. And last January, when I came together with the Archbishop of Canterbury, we asked the government of United Kingdom and to appoint a special envoy. And now they have appointed a special envoy to Sudan, which is so for that person to follow and monitor every day what is happening in the Sudan. So that is a very great concern, which we have seen that the British government have taken. And moreover, concerning the aids and other things, the British government is sending a lot of resources to see to that people in the southern Sudan and the Sudan as a whole are supported.
Thank you very much. I think we probably need to draw stumps there, as we're due across the river to do a little bit more of this work with the government this morning. Thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you.